On into the cemetery, kids. It's time for In the Corner, back by the woodpile.
When I was a kid, I sometimes had to walk home through the woods. And of course, it'd be very dark, and I would hear things in the woods. The crushing of dead leaves, the bending of limbs. And I was so scared and ran straight home and telling my mom that I thought I heard ghosts or creatures of some sort out in the woods trying to get me. And her response to that was, if we ever encountered anything ghostly or demonic, all we had to do was pray to Jesus and he would protect us. And so I believed it. And so I lost the fear of anything supposedly supernatural. And then over time, I just lost belief in a lot of that stuff. That is until a few years ago, I started to have a recurring dream about a house in the middle of a field that was about a block size, and that was in the middle of a city. And the house was very typical of an old mansion, wooden floors, twisty stairwells and staircases, a piano, many libraries, occasionally some people in it. And in fact, at the piano sometimes was one of my dead girl crushes, a singer named Una Mae Carlisle.
That's why I'm evil. I don't know what to do, but I'm evil.
But that's immaterial to the story. And I really came to love those dreams because I got to explore this house of all these books and interesting people. And to me, it was just a fantasy house. I'll probably never be able to afford that kind of house, so at least I can visit one in a dream. Then one day, I was casually looking at a book about strange places in Indiana. And I turned the page, and there is the house. I cannot believe it. And I quit breathing. I was so shocked. Well, come to find out, this building was actually a library in Evansville, Indiana, very close to where I grew up. And supposedly there was a ghost there, a woman who haunted the children's library. I called my dad immediately and asked him, had my parents ever taken me to that library? And he said, possibly. He remembered that there was a woman who worked there who was a pretty great storyteller, and they might have taken me to hear her tell some of her stories. In fact, he remembered she used to practice telling her stories while she walked to the library, adding a little bit of strangeness to it. But again, that's immaterial. So the next time I went to visit my parents in Evansville, we went by the Willard Library, and it wasn't exactly how it had been in my dream, but very close in some ways, and definitely very creepy. I didn't see the gray lady, as they call her, the woman who lives down in the basement. And I never did figure out what was the significance of me having those dreams. But it did kindle in me a great interest in ghosts and spirits and what that means when we think we see them, and why almost every culture in the world seems to claim that some spirits insist on hanging around. If ghosts or spirits stick around because they got something they want to say, well, this is the podcast for them. I went around to a handful of friends and looked at some books, and these are a few things of what we found.
I believe,
oh man,
I believe,
oh man,
I believe,
oh man,
that old man Moses did.
First up, my friend Gracita, relaying a story that happened to her.
I lived in some apartments right on top of Bernard, and that's when we initially met.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl next door to me, she was really nice, really smart. And she was just really smart, and she told me that there was a woman that would appear on her side of the house.
Uh-huh.
And she talked to me about it, and she asked me if I had ever seen her, and that she would talk to her, and that she would just see her all the time. I just thought she was crazy.
Uh-huh.
Maybe she'd been smoking too much.
Yeah.
Walkie tobacco. But one day I did wake up and I had a dog, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and just because I felt a breeze in the apartment, I walked out, and the dog, I mean, she was on the bed with me, and the front door was completely open. I had the type of door that would, you would close it,
uh-huh,
and it would shut.
Bolt. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think it was a situation where like the wind blew it open,
uh-huh,
or anything like that. But the dog never got out of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog stayed in the bed the whole time. And I got up and I walked out and I saw that the door was open, and then I could feel like something in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I was not wearing pants. I was only wearing like a little t-shirt because it was hot.
Uh-huh.
It was in the summer and I did not have air.
Uh-huh.
And so I went outside and I had this old phone with like the longest cord ever. Uh-huh. So I like took this phone out of my house and called 911. Uh-huh. And the cops came over.
And you were out in the front yard with no pants on still?
Yes. I came out of a bush as the police officer drove up. I came out of the bush and I said, I called you. When you go in there, do you mind getting a blanket for me? And he said, why? And I'm like, I'm not wearing pants. And he was like, I'm not going to ask. But here are these two cops with, like, guns drawn. And they were like, we're just going to say that the wind blew your door open. Uh-huh. He goes, even though that can't be done. Mm-hmm. But after she left, another girl moved in. And that girl was weird. Uh-huh. And she told me about the same thing about this woman who lived in the apartment, and she loved cats, and the girl had a cat. When she would go to work in the morning, she would leave like a blanket on the bed for her because the woman was always cold.
Wow.
I never saw the woman. Huh. She might have tried to open my door because she didn't like me.
Didn't like
I'm
your
not
dog.
Sure. Didn't like my dog. But
I was trying to tell you to put pants on.
Yeah.
Grace is originally from Chiapas, Mexico. So I asked her, did she have any stories from her childhood?
The most vivid memory that I have about like a story that was told to us was about there was a cemetery. I lived in a very small town, and there was a cemetery, and it was like a dirt road going up to the cemetery, and it was like outside of the city. And they would say that whenever you would walk to the cemetery at night, you could feel like a shadow coming, like kind of like a mist in the air, and mm-hmm. kind of like a shadow kind of coming through you. Uh-huh. And it was supposed to be like a man on a horse, and supposedly he is there to guard, you know, he was there to guard the dead bodies. Uh-huh. And somebody killed him, so I guess he was kind of like the groundskeeper of the cemetery. Uh-huh. And somebody killed him. And so at night, if you came into the cemetery, like around midnight, uh-huh. you could supposedly feel that. Uh-huh. And
was he still guarding the...
Supposedly, that's what he was doing. Uh-huh. I remember we never did go to the cemetery at midnight because my parents would have killed us. Uh-huh. But we did go a couple of times, like around 10:30, 11. And so... where we lived was kind of like a mountain uh-huh. area. So at night, you always had like a heavy fog. Uh-huh. I remember I went with my brothers one time, and you could just feel like these breezes going by you. But now that, and I remember at that time, it was like, oh my God, it's the man on the horse. And, you know, we all would run back home. But now I can just kind of think about it, and I just think it was like natural air.
Right.
But it really scares you when you're young.
Yeah.
Now, Grace used to also have a house in which one of the rooms was always freezing, even in the middle of the summer, even with the heat running. The dog would not enter the room, her mother would not enter the room, because everyone claimed to feel something bad in the room. The only creature that would go into the room was the cat, which was certified evil anyway. So I told my friend that next time she was out of town and needed somebody to watch the dog, let me do it, and I would spend the night in that room. So the time came, and a friend of mine wanted to join me as well. So we spent the night in the room, and in the middle of the night we woke up, and the bed was shaking. I was so excited, I was like, awesome, the ghost is here. But when I looked under the bed, I found the cat sharpening its claws on the bedpost. So, nothing again. But later on, Grace did receive a strange letter in the mail. It was a letter with a photograph of the house as it was originally built, I think in the 30s or maybe the 20s possibly. And it was from the descendants of possibly the original owners, which was interesting because Grace and her husband were told when they bought the house that it had been built maybe in the 40s or 50s possibly. And so that seems strange that the house was much older than they were told. And when Grace did some digging in some public records, found out, well, somebody had been murdered in the house. A drug dealer, apparently. Though in the basement and not in that room. So, as far as an ending to this story, I've got nothing that really wraps things up.
She's my wish.
Now, back in the 90s, I made friends with a myth keeper for the Cherokee people in Tennessee by the name of Marion Iuene Dunn. She relayed several stories to me, so eventually a friend and myself recorded her, and there was one story in particular that she told that involved what she called a magician, and I would say sounded pretty close to a witch or a warlock. And here it is.
Before anyone can remember, a cruel magician was hindering grandfather's son's travels across the sky. Warriors went out looking for the magician. When they found him, they killed him and cut off his head to shelter their village. The head was still alive. That night, the warriors hung the head on a tree to die. Next morning, it was still alive. The people changed trees on which to hang the stubborn head. It lived on. After several more tries, someone suggested hanging the head on a cedar tree. Next morning, it was a dead head. Blood from the head had run down the tree trunk. The red streaks in cedar wood is blood from the cruel magician's head, the Cherokee believe. Cedar is sacred to the Cherokee. They use cedar boughs for smudging, but never burn the wood.
Next up, we go down to Mississippi. I chatted with a girl named Amy who told about the house that she grew up in, which seemed to torment her family from day one.
We didn't know this until later, mm-hmm. but the house was built where there was a hotel at one time.
Okay.
And the hotel burned down. Uh-huh. There was a hotel that was there back, I mean, it had to be in the wagon days because okay. it was a wagon trail.
Oh, okay.
That went, you could still see it.
And the name of the town is?
Meridian.
Meridian.
The hotel was there because of a artesian well that was in, or artesian springs.
Artesian springs, okay.
That was in in the woods. Uh-huh. And there was actually like a civil war or some sort of camp uh-huh. around the springs that was still there from way back in the day.
Are the springs still there?
Yeah, they were there when I lived there.
Oh, okay.
We walked down.
Are there tourists?
No, they're in the middle of the woods and nobody goes there.
Really?
Yeah, they were capped at one point
oh, okay.
by the city, but there was still some water and
okay.
really clear water.
Okay.
So I guess people would stay at the hotel, uh-huh. travel down to the springs and bathe in the springs.
Okay.
There was also, we would find a lot of arrowheads uh-huh. all around on the uh-huh. hill uh-huh. Around the spring. So because they must have been there for a long time. So
right.
the natives used it when they were there.
Right, right.
And then the Civil War people came through. So the hotel burned down. I'm not sure if anyone passed away, mm. but we always wondered about it.
Sure.
The house we lived in was built, it was an old ranch house. It was really, really long, had a really long hallway, uh-huh. and it had two big rooms on each side of the house. Uh-huh. And then all the bedrooms were off the middle of the hallway, which was really odd. Uh-huh. And there was about 10 doors that led to the outside of the house.
Really? That's a big house.
It was really long.
It was really long. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't really know what the first episode was. Uh-huh. Now, my sister is a good bit older than me. Uh-huh. And she was a teenager when things got really bad for her.
Really?
In the house. And okay. I've always heard that poltergeists uh-huh. tend to affect teenage girls with a lot of energy
yeah.
more. And she's the one that had the most experiences okay. in the house. She would hear crying in the house a lot. Uh-huh. And she would walk from one end of the hallway to try to find it. You know, she thought, well, there was 7 of us in the house. She thought maybe somebody.
Yeah,
so she would go to one end of the hallway and then she would hear it on the other end. So she was just this. And that happened several times for her.
Was it a male or female voice or a child?
I think it was a female.
Female voice. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was something that kind of went on for her. She heard that a lot. We all experienced the house sort of vibrating. The house was really close to the airport.
Okay.
So we always thought that it was something like that, but we asked someone at the airport and they were like, there's no way that it would make your entire house vibrate.
Right.
You know? But yeah, the windows would shake a lot. So that could be explained, but
okay.
At times at night when they said they weren't flying any airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
We came home on several occasions and the lights were flickering on and off in the entire house.
Mm, yeah.
We did not go home those nights.
What did you do?
We turned around and went to my grandmother's house.
Oh, wow.
My dad worked a lot and he was out of town a lot. And my mom was really brave because after experiencing everything that everyone experienced, she still
stuck it out.
Stuck it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't have a lot of money,
you
know,
to choice.
Move, and yes,
you had
we just kind of stayed there. We came home a couple of times, and all 10 doors in the house would be open. And my mom had a shotgun, so she'd get the shotgun and walk through the house to make sure that nobody was there.
Sure.
And nobody was over there. And one time we came home, and all the doors were open, and there was this sugarcane knife sitting on our table, and we still have it.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been somebody that was in the house, you know, but it was a long sort of...
So it was left there, you mean?
Yeah, it was sitting on our table.
And it had never been there before?
No, we'd never seen the knife before, where it came from.
Wow. Was it old? Or
it was really old, and it was... My dad is from the area. He actually grew up really close to where the house was. And he said it was a knife he used to shred sugar cane with. Back in the day.
Okay.
Because there was a lot of, there was a sugar farm.
Sure.
Really close to where it was too. There was a tree in the front yard that was struck by lightning 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
They say lightning never strikes
same
place. Okay. Yeah, that's not true. It was a really big tree and I always thought that was so weird. Like that there was some sort of a...
magnet for the...
Yeah,
yeah.
For the...
And did it survive each time?
It was dying.
Oh, dying.
But it still was getting
right.
Struck multiple times. I thought that was really weird. We would find things. Things would come up missing in the house all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like brushes and like our personal items, you know. If I ever saw it, maybe, you know, I would think my sister took it or something. But we could never find them. When we moved out of the house, they were stuck in the top of this closet. And there was a little hole in the closet. And all of our items were in the closet when we moved.
Wow.
We found
and you
them.
Pulled them all out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find anything else in addition to your items? Like
no, that was it.
Huh.
Yeah, it was just like random little items
yeah,
that...
Like klepto ghost or something.
No. I did have an experience when I was probably about 9 or 10. I woke up in the middle of the night. And there was a woman sitting on the end of my bed. And she was completely dressed in black from head to toe. And it didn't scare me. I don't know why it didn't scare me at the time. But I sat up to reach her and then she was gone. And I know I wasn't dreaming because I got up and went to the bathroom. And I came back and got in bed. And then when I got back in bed, I started to register. I don't know, being like a 9 or 10 year old. And
well,
I was
yeah.
like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Yeah, I was not sleeping.
Yeah.
After my sister moved out, she always hated the house. She hated it with passion. And she met these people at a party one time and they were telling kind of ghost stories back and forth. And they kind of had similar experiences of a place where the windows would rattle and the lights would flash on and off and just like, oh wow, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Where did you live?
Uh-huh.
And they said, we used to live in a house. It was at the end of the airport. It was the same house.
Oh,
we were living in the same house. Yeah, they had lived there, I guess, a couple of years before we had lived there. My brother, when he was younger, used to talk about the green man. And my mom always thought it was just his imagination, but maybe he was seeing something too. And my sister, she did see an apparition, like in the window or something at some point. Like she was the one that really everything, kind of focused around.
Now, since she's obviously moved out of the house now, has she had any trouble since, like at other places?
No, not at all.
Huh. Just that one place.
Yeah. So there was a lake down from the house, just a little bit. And we had a little John boat, And we would hear what sounded like somebody beating the oar on the side of the boat at night. Not every night, but right. lots of times. My dad would go down there with the gun and see if anybody was down there. And the boat would be tied up. Uh-huh. And the oar sitting in the bottom of the boat.
And could he still hear the sound, or it would just kind of stop when he got close?
Yeah, it would just stop. So my mom mm-hmm. is very old-fashioned, mm-hmm. super religious, mm-hmm. Catholic woman. She's uh-huh. a great woman. Uh-huh. And the thing that she talks about the most, and the thing that affected her most, even though she saw all the other stuff, I guess she was brave for the rest of us. Uh-huh. But she said she got out of the shower one day, and my mom's very pragmatic, very sensible woman. Uh-huh. And she would always have an explanation for something. She got out of the shower one day, and in the fog in the mirror was, she said, a very distinct picture of like Jesus's face.
Really?
And this like agonizing look on his face.
Huh.
She's not one to make up stories right, or yeah. anything. She's very...
Well, that kind of puts a bit of a good and evil twist on things. You know, you wonder if Jesus is in anguish because of something in that house.
I know.
You know, wow.
The thing that affected my sister the most was when she met the lady mm-hmm. that had lived in the house before us. Mm-hmm. She came home and she was very upset. She always hated the house.
The people at the party.
Yeah, the people at the party. So she went into her room, and there was this one room where we found all the things in the top of the closet. Had really tall shag carpet, and the door you would have to really push to close it. And that was the room where I saw the lady. She was really mad, and she went into her room. And in her head, she said, "If there's something here, show yourself." And the door slammed closed.
Wow.
And then she said she didn't think it. Uh-huh. But something came into her mind and said, "Lock it." And she said when she heard it in mm-hmm. her mind, mm-hmm. you know, that she jumped up and she ran out. And my mom said she came out of that room just squalling. But it was like something told her that they were going to lock it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Last year, I was visiting a farm in Zimbabwe near the border of Botswana, and while I walked in the field with the boss of the farm, he began telling me these stories. If they're a little hard to understand, don't worry, I am going to retell the story in a second. It's going to be one of those cases where you wished Christopher Walken jumped in and said, "We need less cowbell."
A funny story, which I was told by one of my grandfather. Then he said, during his boyhood, he was visiting his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Then when he approached the area where his girlfriend was staying, then he could not find her. Then he just pushed the door and then he entered into the house, then waiting for the girlfriend to come. But the girlfriend came very late, mm-hmm. around the area, but they were men. That is what he told me. They were men, but they were naked. Which means his girlfriend was a witch.
So the girl, it was actually several men.
Mm-hmm. Then when they approached into the house, which he was sleeping, then they started to say, there is a smell of meat, of a human being. Then when he was hearing that, he was now afraid. Uh-huh. And he saw his girlfriend uh-huh. naked. Then he pushed the door outside. Uh-huh. And then he started to run away. And then he said they were throwing some piece of, what can I say this? Half inch uh-huh. to him as a stone. Trying to catch him.
Uh-huh.
But they could not even catch him. That is what he told me.
Wow.
He said he wanted to marry that girlfriend.
I'm glad he didn't.
He could not even marry. And from that day, he never went back to
wow.
see her.
So to recap, this guy's grandfather was waiting for his girlfriend in his girlfriend's hut. And some men approached, some naked men, and they said, "We smell the meat of humans." And he looked out of the hut and he saw all these naked men who quickly transformed into his girlfriend, also naked. And he knew he was dating a witch. And so his grandfather decided to get out of there like a bat out of Detroit. Back over to Tennessee, my friend Kristen told me about a time that her and her friends paid to hang out at a haunted house in a haunted woods.
This is a commercial haunted house in Hendersonville.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, it was the haunted woods when it still had the house connected to it. So we got through the house, and everything was fine. I got a little scared. It wasn't too bad. Then we started going through the woods. That's where they had the major scares. And I was fine because I had to go before everybody else because everybody else was chickens. They're all cowered behind me, and I'm going through. And I'm like, hey, this isn't too bad. It's not that scary. We get to the last scare, and it's the guy dressed up as Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah, that movie really messes with me. So we get past him and get out. Unbeknownst to me, he's followed us out of the cornfield. He's followed us out of the field. And he proceeds to chase me from the end of the maze thing over to the parking lot. I was pissed off and I was scared. So we get over to almost where our car is, and he finally stops. And he just starts laughing at me. Like, it's like the funniest thing in the world. So I walked up to him and I punched him.
In the face?
Oh, yeah.
And his leather face.
Oh, yes. And it was awesome. And he was like, man, why'd you hit me? I'm like, dude, you just chased me almost a quarter mile.
With a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw.
Was it running?
Yes. And he was like, I don't understand why you're scared. You know it's not, it doesn't have a real chain in it. It's not blah, 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 blah. That's not the point. The point is you chased me. Everybody I came with is still on the other side of this that field. I'm over here with you by myself. I don't know you.
Did you? So you made Leatherface cry?
Yes, I made Leatherface cry. And then he escorted me back to my party.
Really?
I made him walk me back. I'm like, you chased me over here. You're going to walk me back to where my people are.
Did you have a nice conversation?
Oh, yeah. He was a halfway decent guy.
Did you get your phone number?
God, no. He asked, but no.
Really? He did, see? Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah, that was not going to happen.
When I was teaching in China, my assistant at the school had invited me to come visit her village for a day. I met her family, her neighbors, walked around in the peanut fields, and at one point we walked by a temple whose doors were closed. This is kind of a rare thing in China. Most temples are open for business, so to speak. There's usually a nun or a monk sitting inside to sell you incense or a little pamphlet or some ghost money, but this one was sealed shut. I asked why, and after some inquiries, my assistant found out that the temple used to double as a schoolhouse, and there was one teacher who was incredibly strict with the children. And as the story goes, he was particularly hard on one boy. Well, one morning, the children came to school, and as they walked in their classroom, they found their classmate, the boy, hanging from the rafters. He had hung himself. In spite of the fact of China being very Darwinistic, communist, materialist, atheistic, however you want to say it, they're still very superstitious. And so the school and the temple was never used ever again. In fact, they had to build another school and another temple down the road to replace that one. I was dying to get inside, but no one seemed to know who had the authority to let me in. And plus, most people were not happy that I was asking all these questions. Later on, a reporter from a local newspaper had wanted to do an article on me. I had been interviewed once before, and again, in a communist society, the script is already written, and they wanted me to say things about how great China was, and I didn't want to repeat that experience, because in the words of one of my children who read the article later, said, teacher, they kind of made you sound like an idiot. But the reporter persisted, and I tried to make a deal with her. One, she couldn't make me look like an idiot. Two, she would try to help me find out the story behind this dead kid in the temple. She agreed, and I came out looking pretty good. But when she went to investigate the incident in the village, she ran into the same walls that I did. Yet another story I don't have a conclusion for. Okay, last story. This is an ancient tale that comes from Korea. And when I think of Korea, I think of rotten cabbage that's been buried in the dirt. And I also think of Morgan Freeman. So I asked my friend, Morgan Freeman, hey, can you read this Korean story for us? And he agreed.
This is the story of the unmarried girl's grave. One day, a man made water by the roadside. It happened that at that very spot there was a grave, level with the ground. That night, the man dreamed that a beautiful girl came to him and said, today you showed me your most precious possession, which I assume was his unit. And now, all my bitterness against this world has melted away. You have made it possible for me to travel to the other world, and I am deeply grateful for your kindness. The dead girl had never known a man in this world, and so she could not go to the other world, but was condemned to wander forever on the earth. The man's breach of etiquette had, however, rescued her spirit from its unhappy fate. So now she wished to repay his kindness before she went on to the other world, which I assume was Mississippi, where I'm from. So it happened that the man passed the civil examination with ease and married a beautiful wife. On his wedding night, the girl appeared once more and said to him, "I think I have repaid my debt to you. Farewell." She vanished and never appeared again. It is said that from time to time, if a woman dies before she marries, she is buried in a flat, inconspicuous grave, so that a man might unwittingly make water on the grave. The customary Korean grave is a circular mound of heaped up earth. Get my agent on the phone. I'm going to fire that mother scratcher.
And I should mention that's Morgan Freeman, as in Morgan with two O's and two A's, and Freeman with five E's. So this ends our visit to the haunted wood pile. I'd like to thank everyone who shared their stories with me. And I also want to thank Jim Beasley, Terrence Boyce, Dirk Allman, and Brendan Sharp. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.